Radio Vermont, WDEV, takes no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the House Calls Vermont show host or their guests. The information provided during the House Calls Vermont show is offered only as a public service and should not be used as a substitute for obtaining any professional advice from a licensed professional.
WDEV presents House Calls Vermont. Host Jim Bradley and Chris West share their knowledge and expertise on topics specific to the opportunities and challenges of building and renovating in Vermont. Brought to you by Hannon Home Center, Mason Drive, Waterbury, Shamrock Painting, Painting and Custom Wood Finishing, ShamrockPaintingCompany.com. RK Miles, Alan Lumber will soon be RK Miles. Tune into House Calls Vermont for more details. Sticks and Stuff, Swanton Lumber, and locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber. There's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at CurtisLumber.com. And Matt Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basement-y, NorthernNEFoundations.com. Your participation is encouraged. Call the listener line with questions at 244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Now, House Call Vermont with Jim and Chris.
Hi, this is Chris West.
And this is Jim Bradley.
And we are House Calls Vermont. We'd like to, first of all, wish you all a very happy Halloween for 2020. And by way of introduction, we'd just like to start off by saying welcome. And once again, that number, if you want to call in with a question, 244-1777 in the 802 area code and 877-291-8255. Also, if you're interested in listening to this, not on the radio, but actually on the live stream, you can go to WDEVradio.com and click on the live stream there and hear us there.
So one of the main reasons we wanted to have this venue of opportunity for listeners is with the years of experience, decades of experience that both Chris West and myself have had in the industry, we have seen a lot of the things of how you can do something incorrectly. And when you're trying to look at your home on doing home improvement projects, or you're trying to weatherize with the coming winter season on its way, yeah, you want to make sure that you're going to do things appropriately, because the last thing we wanted to see is that somebody would do something with great intentions but ended up messing things up. So a lot of times it's just a simple guidance that we can offer on how to go to the store and look for the right items, how to install those items, and also how to look for a building professional or home improvement professional to assist you in some of those with some of those processes.
Yeah, Jim and I have been working in this industry each more than 10 years. I'm a building science consultant. I've got 10 years of experience as a passive house consultant building passive houses. If you don't know what that is, that's a super insulated house that has almost no energy, heating, or cooling bills and has a very healthy indoor air quality. One of the things in the passive house training that we learn is about what it is that helps buildings not rot, right? What it is that makes a building have healthy indoor air quality. And Jim has 10 years plus experience as a builder, as well as working for the Efficiency Vermont Energy Excellence Network. And we'll be talking more about that in a bit. Jim.
So basically, since we've been in this, you know, a lot of things have changed over the years within the industry, and building science has become more and more important as we move forward. Some of the evolution of that back in the late 70s, early 80s, and throughout the 80s, I should say, in the 90s, techniques were being developed that ended up creating some really bad results on the other side of things with premature rot, as Chris was saying, for the building, sick buildings when it comes to mold, and you had other items that were going on that were affecting the health of the occupants. So we thought this would be a great way to ask some of the simple questions, or answer some of your simple questions, guide you on where to find certain elements or items, but also what to ask your contractor, you know, to make sure that they are aware of some of the things going on. Because unfortunately, in the state of Vermont currently, a lot of the education that you're going to obtain, unless you're really active as a contractor to find it yourself, is what your salesperson is going to tell you about the product. And you need to know more about the building as a system. And so a lot of times people would call us to have a home performance energy assessment done, with myself being an energy auditor as well. And we'd go in and we'd say, listen, it's not just about energy efficiency in your home. It's first about getting the health and safety component correct. and the durability of the structure. And if you get those two correct, you're going to have energy efficiency coming along for the ride as an extra benefit.
Another one of the reasons we're interested in doing this show is that we have been in a lot of people's houses, and they have, with pride, pointed out thousands of dollars worth of work they've done themselves, or their son-in-law did, or their cousin did. And when we look at them, we just, our heart crestfallen, because we know it was done with the best of intentions, but without the knowledge required to do the job right. And I can just remember just looking right now at my memory of seeing this nice old elderly woman who said, my husband or my son just did thousands of dollars worth of work, and we have to look at her and say, you know, that work did absolutely nothing to help your heating bills or the comfort in the house, and may have even caused a situation that could create a health issue in the future. This is why we're passionate.
And also, you know, we see some of the advertisements that are out there and some of the instructions that are being given. I've seen and heard some even recently on the radio from other shows, no names going to be shared, but we're actually not the best tactics to use or techniques to use in installing insulation. I'm sure some of you have heard, if I have insulation in my attic, just put more on top of it. That's not a great way to achieve things if you haven't done appropriate air sealing in your attic. And these are some of the topics that we're going to key on as we go forward today, but also through the weeks to come, through the winter season. And hopefully it'll be a great assistance to everybody involved.
I would also like to point out that Jim and I are both, me being a past and Jim the present, president of the Home Builders and Remodelers Association of Vermont. And we're huge supporters of that association. We believe that one of the things that a builder has by being a member of that association is a group of other builders who are going to hold them accountable and say, you should know at least these things. We have a code of conduct that people have to sign when they become members, so that we try to keep the membership at a very high level of quality of the work they're doing. It seems we already have our first call. We've got Niels from Jericho. Niels, how can we help you today?
Hi. So I have a house that was built about in 1850 or so, and we need to get the siding replaced. So what would be our best options? I mean, several things, but one is, you know, in terms of being able to insulate. Also, I was curious, like, what is the difference between, like, having wood, like, say, cedar or spruce, as opposed to cement board?
Great questions. I'm assuming that the house has got just a good old-fashioned set of 2.5 or 3-inch reveal clapboards on the outside.
Yeah, it's about about 2 inches. Yeah.
And you're planning on doing all of the exterior, or are you going to do it in a phased manner?
It'll be a phased approach.
Okay. Right now, without having looked in your walls, Jim and I have been in about 100 of these types of houses. And what we know is that those old houses either have plank walls, which means there's no opportunity for putting insulation in the actual wall because it's actually right. Solid wood, or it's a 4-inch plaster type wall where you have plaster lath on the inside, even sometimes with what we call back plastering, where they put an extra layer of plaster in the middle of that 4 inches, which makes it almost impossible to put any insulation in the house itself between the studs. In that case, we would highly recommend moving your insulation to the outside if at all possible. I know that makes the window reveals an issue, because as soon as you start adding 3-4 inches of rigid insulation to the outside, you're going to have issues with your windows no longer, or they even look like they're recessed, or they need to be built out. So that's a first question. Jim?
Well, I also, it brings to mind is the fact that, you know, one, you're doing the right thing, Niels, in the fact of you're going to change something significant on the outside of a structure. And this happens, too, when you're doing something, if you're going to be roofing, or if you're going to be doing the siding. These are the, you know, once in a lifetime opportunities usually to get to these areas and make some corrections and really beef up the performance of the home. And so with that, I think you're doing the right thing. And when you comes to an old home, I know some people will say the easiest way to go through this is to just put a little bit of foam insulation on the outside, like a half inch, like it's a bifold or multifold insulation, and then put vinyl siding over it, which is one of the worst things you can do in our opinion, because because we have seen those buildings be approached that way. And what happens is that that there's still deterioration going on behind the scenes, but you don't see it. And then later you have a structure that's rotted away. And, and it also affects the indoor air quality. So I think first and foremost, I would look at how deep is the retrofit budget, you know, and are you able to do this appropriately? And that would really key in on having a contractor out there who's not just about siding, but is also about building performance and getting that siding not just replaced, but also the insulation done appropriately. If you have an insulator come in and do maybe dense packing of the wall systems, you want to make sure that they're doing an infrared camera scan so you can see what's in the walls and will it even be done effectively. So those are some of the things that I would be looking for, but some of this could start off with a home performance assessment and having somebody really look at the home and see how it's performing and make those suggestions for you.
Yeah, and it's very important. Like Jim was saying, this will be an opportunity for you to increase the air tightness of the house. Now, we can't say, hearing you over the phone, that you have a leaky house, but it's almost unheard of to have a house from the 1860s or the 1870s that does not have a lot of infiltration losses. Infiltration loss is a technical term we use for the wind blowing the conditioned air out of your house. And so this is a perfect opportunity to not only build up that assembly with exterior rigid if possible, and if there is a cavity in your wall, for that to be where the insulation goes, but also to put a membrane that's outside of that, like a Tyvek or a more intelligent exterior membrane, to allow vapor that gets trapped in the wall to migrate out, but not let bulk water in. So
right.
That's where we'd start with. And definitely an energy assessment before you do anything on the house would give you baseline air leakage that you could test afterwards to see how effective the change was, but also to get you the available subsidy monies that would be allotted to a project like that with a certain reduction of air leakage.
Right. Okay. Subsidy. So if I was to apply for anything like that, they would ask for this sort of an assessment.
Well, one thing that we do is we are partners with Efficiency Vermont, and this is a great place to start because they have an excellent network. The Energy Efficiency Network is our Efficiency Excellence Network. Sorry, they have all these contractors they have vetted who are properly trained in building science, and that's a great place to start. They'll have contractors in your area that will be able to get this started the appropriate way for you.
And the metrics done at the audit will give them a basis for you to understand how much better your house should be operating after that work is done, if it's done properly.
Along with which rebate monies might be available at the same time.
Yep.
Great.
We've got, thank you very much, Niels, for calling. We have Sylvia in Cabot.
Hello.
Hi, Sylvia.
Hi. I have some countertops. They are pine. It's old wood, so it's really hard. They are discolored, some from mold and just from water damage, and they need refinishing badly. So I have two questions. One, how would you clean such counters up and perhaps get rid of the discoloration and the mold? It's sort of a gray coloration. And two, how would you refinish it with a food safe, durable, and low odor and low environmental impact?
Okay. Well, thanks for the question, first of all, and thanks for calling in. It would be important to determine whether or not you're talking about mold or just discoloration from light and other sources. Mm-hmm. If there is mold, you can actually treat that with a mixture of baking soda and water, a quarter cup of baking soda to a gallon of water. Just rub that on, let that sit there. And after that, it would have to be sanded back down to blonde wood, and then you could use something like a linseed oil or some other type of oil. You'd have to apply that on a semi-regular basis, but that would be our recommendation.
Okay. Do you know anything? There's something I saw called, I think it's called OMO.
I'm not familiar with that product.
No. So would linseed oil be a food safe?
Yes.
product?
Yes, you can eat linseed oil. We eat in linseed, so it's a perfectly food-safe option.
Okay, and durable.
Yes. Okay. We were just speaking with Niels. We wanted to just throw out a little more information there. If you have a house that's 150 years old, we can guarantee you that there's going to be lead paint and may even be vermiculite, which is an asbestos-containing insulation that was used until the 1970s. If you're going to be doing any work on your own or hiring someone, make sure that you have proper lead abatement in place, or that they have a charge in their work to include lead abatement. And if we run into vermiculite, that has to be professionally remediated as well.
Excellent. And also on the line right now, we have one of our partners, Steve Spatz with Efficiency Vermont. Just a little bit of history here. I've been a partner with Efficiency Vermont as a building energy auditor for the last 15 years, and I really believe in their mission of helping Vermonters do the best possible work in retrofitting their homes, and also supplying a great list of vetted contractors who can do that work for them. But they also have a great do-it-yourself program. So we've asked Steve to be a reoccurring guest on our show to just let the public know what Efficiency Vermont is offering currently, and to give some pointers at the same time. So Steve, welcome today.
Yeah, happy weekend. How's it going?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. Good to hear you on the radio here today.
Thank you.
Congrats on the show, and couldn't think of a better couple individuals to be putting the word out to folks.
Well, thank you.
Glad to be a part.
So, Steve, if you could, what are some of the do-it-yourself programs that Efficiency Vermont is currently sponsoring for Vermonters?
Well, good timing in that annually, this time of year, Efficiency Vermont, in partnership with other agencies and communities throughout the state, run our Button Up Vermont campaign. And we are in the full swing of Button Up Vermont for 2020. Typically, on a non-COVID year, when we are out and about in the community, we'd be holding events for homeowners to come and learn more about some of the things you're talking about here today. Weatherization, appliances, equipment, ways to make your homes more comfortable, safe, and affordable. And the Button Up program this year has just moved, as pretty much a lot of things we have had to, online this year. So if you go to buttonupvermont.org, you'll find a vast amount of resources there on information on the topics that you're discussing here today. Information on what homeowners can do independently, and then resources for connecting with contractors, our EDN partner contractors, and home performance as well. So specifically on Wednesdays through the end of November, Weatherization Wednesdays, we have some online events at noon, different topics each week on things you can be doing with your home. So those are continuing through the end of the month. There are also recorded sessions of previous Weatherization Wednesdays that this series began at the beginning of September. So there's the past 2 months' worth of Weatherization Wednesdays recorded and available there as well. And this coincides with a DIY rebate offer that Efficiency Vermont has available. And the DIY information is available on the buttonupvermont.org website, as well as on efficiencyvermont.com. So our DIY program is a way for homeowners to be able to get some money back on projects that you can tackle yourself at home. So things like building an air-sealed attic hatch to your attic, building a bulkhead door to basement access, doing some air sealing and insulating in your attic or in a basement, weatherizing air sealing doors, air sealing ductwork for HVAC equipment, insulating hot water pipes. There's a whole list of measures that can be done. And if you complete 3 of the measures on that list and fill out a rebate form for us, and that information's available online, we'll give you a $100 rebate in return. And on the DIY site online as well, we have a ton of resources of how-tos and tips and videos of some of these different projects and what to consider when tackling them on your own.
And one thing, Steve, that comes to mind is when I was part of the program and still am part of the program, but I know that you, the DIY network also consisted of the fact that if you engaged a home performance contractor on the EEN network, that they could come in, put a professional set of eyes on things based on a lot of experience and be able to say, hey, this may be one of the things you want to do, but let's look at this too, and then give you some guidance, develop a scope of work, and then be able to assess what that homeowner is able to do on their own effectively and how to do it right, and then what the contractor really needs to do on a professional level at the same time. And so would you say that that's still a good way to go and then be able to maybe even tap into larger amounts of the rebate monies?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, the viewpoint and perspective of the professionals that are in our network is highly valuable. And you both of you have already, you know, touched upon some of the bigger considerations here. These are professionals who have a different perspective and set of eyes on the building to acknowledge the building as a whole, building as a system, as you've mentioned so far today, and really give you a greater understanding of the dynamics at play in the house and things that maybe you should be paying attention to more so than others. So that is certainly a part of our DIY approach and the button-up program. The button-up communities that participate in the program also have the ability to access contractors and having these assessments done as a part of the button-up program. So certainly, that is the direction we hope many, if not most, homeowners will take, is to get those set of professional eyes and the diagnostic tools available from them on the home.
Great. Well, Steve, thanks so much for checking in, and we're planning on having you on a weekly basis. So if you have interest in an efficiency Vermont program, please go to the buttonup.org or Efficiency Vermont's website. You can look up energy audit there. It'll send you right to the EEN list, so you can get a vetted professional to come out who really knows their stuff. An important point, though, if you are a Vermont Gas member, there are certain requirements that you have them do your audit. Do I have that right, Steve? I just want to make sure that people are contacting
Correct.
You with the right...
Yep. So that information, you can find more of those details on our website as well. So if you go to efficiencyvermont.com, you'll see Find a Contractor on the main landing page. And from there, you can search the type of contractor that you're looking for, your area code, and that'll bring you to contractors in your area, as well as the program eligibility information about the home performance program and other programs that are available. But that is correct, Chris. There, Vermont Gas has its own program that we help them run, but but you would be contacting them directly for those services if you are one of their customers.
Great, Steve. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful, warm Halloween.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, guys. You too. Take care.
Have a good day.
So once again, our number that you can call in with questions that you have regarding your home improvement projects is 802-244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. Please give us a call.
So what is it that we're talking about when we're talking about weatherization? That's a term that a lot of people throw around, and a lot of people think that they can easily weatherize their house. First of all, if your house needs regular weatherization, if you're the type of person who at this time of year is thinking, oh, gee, I've got to get over to the store and buy that plastic stuff and stick it over my windows just to be warm enough in my living room.
Or around my house to cover up the siding.
The entire house. Then you might consider having an energy audit done on your house in order to find a way to target and find out exactly what's going on and how to permanently fix those issues.
And some people may say, but that's an extra expense. I can tell you with absolute certainty, there's not one of the thousands of audits that I've done that giving that information to people, even if they're doing the projects themselves, to help avoid pitfalls and do things correctly will more than pay for itself. And when you couple that with the rebates that Efficiency Vermont is offering, you're going to be money ahead when it's all said and done. So it's just well worth the while to have that extra set of eyes put on things for you.
And just jumping in on some of the things that Steve said that are available for DIY, Jim did jump in and say there are some things that you can do yourself, and there are some things that's better to leave to a professional. And some of the things that Jim and I feel very strongly that we've we would not recommend you doing unless you are dead set in doing it. One of them is that attic air sealing. There, we've been in a number of houses where homeowners did some air sealing, and I, being the less diplomatic of the two of us, would come in and say, who did this bad job at air sealing? And of course, the homeowner would then sheepishly admit, and I'd feel bad because I thought I was calling out a contractor. So there are certain jobs that absolutely, with the right information, a homeowner can do. And even a homeowner with some very good skills might be able to do good air sealing. But you need to know what it is that you're doing. Once again, we're treating homes as a whole system. That's part of the building science point of view. You can't change how the attic is air sealed and not change how the rest of the house is operating. Usually that's a positive change. But I just wanted to point out, there are some things we're 100% behind DIYing, and so others that are 100% DIYing if you have a professional telling you the right way to do it. And there's some things where you're just throwing your money away and your time.
And some of those simple things that you can do on your own, you can, you know, go down to the local hardware stores and purchase some of these items. But some of those items aren't as effective as we'd like to see them be. And some of those are like your gaskets that are the foam gaskets that go over your electrical receptacles or your light switches on the exterior walls. And the reason being is it really doesn't stop the airflow. And there are ways to effectively air seal those receptacles and electrical junction boxes, but you've got to know what you're doing. And because you don't want a shock hazard, you don't want a fire hazard, but you want to basically stop that convective airflow pathway that, as you put your hand on that plate during the winter, some of you may see condensation, a little bit of ice buildup, or it's just really cold to the touch, and you can feel the air coming through on cold days, and you want to be able to stop that, because as that is moving through that spot, it's going to chill down the whole cavity of insulation at the same time, because the way that insulation works, especially like a cellulose, a fiberglass, a rock wool insulation, is it lofts air, warm air molecules, or traps them. And if wind blows through it, it robs that ability of it being able to hold those warm air molecules steady. And so you've got to be able to shut down these convective or air traveling pathways as much as possible. With that, you know, simple caulking can work when you're sealing your window trim. When you look at your window trim, a lot of times when people are doing this, they're keeping in mind that you're going to caulk what you can see, like the sides of the trim. But the top of the trim, the bottom of the trim, I would challenge each of you to go out there and just check. And you'll probably see that there's a gap in between the trim and the actual sheetrock. That's an air pathway, an air leakage pathway. So getting that sealed appropriately is something that you certainly can do on your own. And it's a definite benefit to stop the air leakage. When you start to get into more complex things, that's when we're saying, hey, get somebody else's input on this. I know that a lot of the lumber yards will rent the insulation blowers for loose filling the attic, which is something, if you're ambitious, you certainly can do after properly air sealing that space. But at the same time, I've seen people try to use those to dense pack walls with cellulose, and you can't get a dense pack. And what will happen over the years is that cavity, the insulation will settle, and you start to have things like condensation issues, mold, and things of that nature. And so you want to avoid that. But certainly, I know weather stripping of doors is a big thing. One of the things that I key in on a lot is the door that separates the garage, of an attached garage, to the living space. Because when you have your car inside there and you let it idle for any length of time, you're going to have a carbon monoxide buildup. You also have a pathway for cold air to come in. But that's one of those doors that people fail to keep adjusted appropriately, because they think that there's a buffer between it and the outside, because it actually goes into a garage and not directly outside. But making sure that weather stripping has not been torn apart by a pet, you know, like a cat or a dog, it's easy.
Hey, wait a second. That's my door.
I know.
You're talking about.
I wasn't
about
mentioning names.
I remember when you put that weatherization on that one door to my outside, and within weeks, my cat had ripped it to shreds.
Yep.
That needs replacing, by the way. If your cat rips your Q-lon. Q-lon is one of the gaskets that we use on these doors. If it's not doing the job because your animal has ripped it to shreds, it's time to replace it. And I think one of the things I just want to clarify, when Jim was saying you've got this door between your kitchen usually, or a mudroom, and the garage, and you're starting your car up in the winter because you want it to be warm, you get into it, that garage is filling up with exhaust, and oftentimes you'll be running your dryer at the same time because someone's just done some work, some laundry. That creates a low pressure in the house, which can suck all of those exhaust gases into your house. And we all know that exhaust gases are not good for you. The carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, NOx, and sulfur dioxide fumes in your house, not a way to start your day. So consider that. We also look at the wall that separates the garage from the rest of the house, because those are often not properly weatherproofed or air sealed.
Or even fire rated at the same time. That's another concern. As a builder, you know, you're supposed to be following appropriate codes, and that wall is usually clad, rarely with sheetrock.
Codes in Vermont? Wait a second. Did you just say the C word?
The four-letter word, yes, I did. But yeah, code would dictate that you have a buffer there that's going to be a fire rated material. That can be a fire rated plywood. It can be sheetrock, but it definitely has to have something that will be a thermal barrier for you for safety, should there ever be an event inside the garage. But at the same time, you want to make sure that those joints and the edges are sealed, because otherwise that's where things can infiltrate into the rest of the house. At this time, we're going to go ahead and take a call from Rich from Starksboro. Rich, go ahead.
Hi. While you had, I guess, Jim from Efficiency Vermont, I kind of wanted to ask a question about what the difference is between a Tier 3 and a Tier 4 heat pump water heater. Would you folks happen to know what that might be? Tier 3 has a $600 rebate, and Tier 4, I think, has a $800 rebate.
I don't know the difference between a Tier 3 and a Tier 4. I just want to clarify for the viewers and just make sure I understand what you're saying, Rich. So a heat pump water heater is an electric water heater that is usually called a hybrid hot water heater because it has three particular settings. One is straight up electric, which is just like the electric heater that you've had in the basement since the 1950s. The second is straight up heat pump, where it takes warmth out of the air in your house to make the hot water. And one is hybrid, where it has a computer that decides which is the better option, either straight up electric or heat pump. Just that is what you're talking about, right, Rich?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering which one's a Tier 3 and which one's a Tier 4, but
yeah, that's a good.
That's okay. I do have another question. Let me just jump in for a second.
Sure. and just let you know.
Yes, sir.
I would recommend that you get directly in touch with Efficiency Vermont through that website, and they will either have a chart or a person who can tell you exactly which and what the difference is. And I'll do the research this week, and I'll find out for you. And if you don't get it, just listen next week, and I'll make sure I put that in there.
And Rich, that's one thing we want to do is with this show, that if there are questions that come up that we need to do a little bit further research on as well, just to make sure that our, you know, listeners have the correct information, that we're going to do that. And we're going to make sure that there's follow up and they're not just giving information out there and not making sure that it was correct.
Sure.
And your next question, Rich?
Yeah. I've got a add on room, it's really my camp, but, and it's a lean-to where the top of the rafters are bolted to fastened to a board off of my siding. I cut my siding off and I ran a 2x8 there and I ran my rafters up to it. And I've got a soffit vent down in the lower part, but I can't figure out, and I was just wondering what your ideas are on trying to introduce a vent on the upper end, higher elevation into my rafters up near the building. The main building to get ventilation to exit the building. Do you have any thoughts?
So first and foremost, yeah, making a roof assembly or allowing it to have the opportunity to properly be ventilated is really important. Even if you foam that assembly in the building science that we have learned is that you still want that assembly to have some pathway for moisture to migrate out of the building. And, you know, vapor diffusion is going to happen. It doesn't have to be bulk moisture. It's just vapor in an airstream can happen. You want to have that ability to dry out. The tough part about it is when you put that lean-to, or what I assume what you're saying is a shed-style roof, up against a vertical wall, that becomes a little bit more limited. There is what's called a roof-to-wall vent, and it's made by CoreVent. And I've used that myself personally, where you get into a little bit of a dicey situation is if the pitch of that roof is not adequate. So if you have a 212, a 312, or even a 412 pitch, you may not get enough water shedding off of the roof, and it could possibly back up into that vent. So what I would recommend is first confirm, you know, what that pitch is. You know, if you're above...
It's about a 1.2, 1.3 to 12.
Then that's really tough. In fact, even in that point in time, once you get around a 1 and 12 pitch... or less, you're not going to really have a convective drying plane anyway. The air is just not going to move on its own. So in that case, if you have at least a buffer in between your insulation and the actual sheathing is better than not having anything at all. But putting an effective vent in at that point in time becomes really challenging.
It sounds to me like what we're looking at here is instead of having a cold ceiling, which is a vented ceiling, is that we're recommending you go with a warm ceiling and not vent that. As long as you have a really good bulk moisture, and we're going to use these terms a lot, bulk moisture is liquid water, water vapor is gaseous water, right? So we just want to keep that bulk water out of there. I'm assuming that the addition and your camp are both four season?
No, it's the camp's really summer, but I just don't want to get mold or something like that, you know?
Well, and part of that, what Chris was saying, is the water barrier component is really important, but also with that, making sure whatever insulation is in the cavity is effective as well, and it's not just stuffed in there, but it's actually installed appropriately and ensuring that you have a way to deal with that bulk water if it ever did get in.
Yeah, and if you're dealing with a three-season or a two-season structure, we wouldn't recommend insulating at all. Keeping it as vapor open and air open would make sure that we weren't getting moisture buildup, which is what we're always trying to get rid of.
And another thing that we were touching on when Neil's called in was about the older homes and what are some of the possible things you might find in those, aside from the various carcasses of decomposing rodents and such like that, or knob and tube wiring or things like that.
And by old, we're not talking glacially old. We're talking before 1980.
Exactly. That is correct. One of the types of insulation that was used back in the day, and some of this product is still used, but it was called vermiculite insulation. It's a tannish-colored, crystalline in form, and it looks shimmery. And, you know, some of you may recognize it in some of the potting soils that are out there. But back in the day when it was used as insulation, it was used as insulation because it filled all in all very easily. So you could take these wall structures from the attic and just pour it in, and it would find its way into all the nooks and crannies, which makes it that much more difficult to remediate or get out of the walls at a later date. What they found, though, that 80% of that insulation came from a mine in Libby, Montana. And when vermiculite was being mined, it was actually had it, the veins of vermiculite that ran crisscross and parallel with veins of asbestos. But when they mined it, they took out everything at the same time, put it in the bag, and didn't know the hazards of asbestos at that time, and shipped it out. And then the homeowners could go down to the local hardware store, pick it up, pour it in, and thought everything was great until we learned about things with, you know, the lung cancer and the mesothelioma that it would cause, and it became a real issue. So now, when you're going to buy a home, and you don't know about this, or you're going to try to improve your home, you need to be aware that these things are there. And just take a big shop vac up to try to vacuum it out. Well, you just spread all these microfibers around the house at 180 miles an hour out the exhaust. And that's really a danger.
We're not allowed to do a blower door test on a house that has vermiculite. At least we're not allowed to do what's known as a negative pressure blower door test. Yeah. There is a protocol where we can do a positive pressure blower door test. But Jim and I are both practitioners who feel that that's a bad idea.
Because what you can end up doing is pressurizing the attic space and then pushing more of these fibers through the rest of the wall systems throughout the house. And so if it's a risk on one side, it's going to be a risk on the other. But that being said, there are ways to have this properly remediated. There's also what's called the Zonalite Fund, where up to $4,000, I believe it is, or 40% of the project cost for remediation will be paid for from this big captive fund that was set up after litigation. And so all you have to do is send a sample of that off. They have a really easy protocol to follow, and it can help you get monies off that remediation project, which is probably going to be relatively expensive, but you've got to do it correctly. And then afterwards, you can go ahead and do the air sealing and insulation and have a much better performing home. I have heard that some are actually doing a pseudo blend of this, where they'll go up in the decontamination suits and they'll do some attic air sealing with the vermiculite in place and then add more insulation, but that's not being done on a regular basis that we're aware of.
And more importantly, we're not big fans, because we find that the ability of doing good air sealing work while leaving something like that in place just is not in the cards. I have bought a house. The house had vermiculite. It had about 1,200 square feet of attic space that was full of vermiculite. It cost about $10,000 to have that vermiculite professionally remediated. The fund paid me $4,200 in recompense, because I did send it in to the Zonalite Fund, and it was found out to be from that mine in Libby, Montana. So the end cost was about $6,000 to have that vermiculite remediated. I had a much better feeling about the house, knowing that there wasn't a bunch of asbestos floating around, and the hit and miss ability of someone to work around vermiculite and not spread it just is not something that I'm confident about.
The other thing, Chris, you know, we're looking at these possible hazards that people are living with. What are some of the other things that you think that a homeowner should be aware of?
If you have a house that was built before 1980, we can almost guarantee that there's lead paint. Lead paint is a big issue with houses in Vermont. The state of Vermont Department of Health lists both asbestos in vermiculite and lead paint as very high contaminants for house remodels. And there is something called the RRP, which is a federal program which requires that any type of work done on more than 6 square feet of a house needs to have professional lead remediation set up. And that is quite a big deal. If you're having outside work done, like Niels, who called before, is having his siding taken out, the proper remediation is to put plastic on the ground up to 10 feet out from the wall, not do it on a windy day, pull that stuff out. That plastic has got to be properly, what is it, goosenecked, how they tie the bags, all these protocols, yes, to make sure that we're protecting ourselves from lead. Now, you may say, I have a cousin, and that cousin worked in a lead mine, and he was fine. However, we know for sure that lead is a horrible poison, especially for younger minds.
And the reason being is, with kids, you know, the reason why they go after it and start eating it, they'll see these little chips, is that it's sweet to the taste. Don't go try that out on your own, but that's the problem. And then they'll start ingesting this, and like Chris said, it creates these huge developmental disorders.
So if you're going to have work done by any professional, or you're going to do it yourself, I would definitely recommend, if you're going to be working with a professional, make sure that there is a line item in the quote that includes either asbestos remediation, if that's what's required, and that has to be professionally done, not just by some contractor, but a professional asbestos remediation company, or that they have a line item in there covering the cost of the remediation for lead work.
And once again, I'll just give your number out for calling in with any questions that you may have regarding home improvements or building new. 802-244-1777 or toll free 877-291-8255. Another thing that we wanted to dive into a little bit is, when you're doing things on your own to your home, you are changing the dynamics of how the home operates. You know, from an air circulation standpoint, air quality standpoint, yes, definitely a heating type of load that would be needed for the house. And so what you need to do is think of your house as a system, yes, but like it's in the scales. So if you're pushing up on one side of the scale or putting something on the other side of the scale, it's going to change things. And so to keep things balanced out appropriately, you have to take into consideration what you're doing. We've seen some people try to go ahead and insulate around their basement walls, but yet leave the basement floor exposed. And we're going to get into basements in a couple of weeks when Matt Clark from Northern Basement Systems joins us. But basements are a really big important area of the home, but let's say you go ahead and insulate around the sides and you leave that dirt exposed, that's a moisture pathway. And even though it may not be standing water, you still have water evaporation that's going to get into the home, and it's going to possibly accelerate rot within the building structure, but also introduce a mold factory. And so by doing good work with good intentions, you could create other issues. So that's why it's so important to do it right.
I would say one of the things that most people don't know about moisture and our good friends mold, mildew, and wood rot. So mold requires three things in order to live. It needs an organic source, which we have all around the house.
Which could be like wood.
Wood or the paper, yep, the paper of your sheetrock. That's all organic material. It needs a temperature above 40 degrees, and it really loves something around 70 degrees. Does that sound familiar? Like, your house is where mold likes to do well. The other one is moisture. So of the three, we really can't change anything. We can change the fact that there's moisture in the house. We can't change the fact that there's a food source. We can't change the fact that there's going to be temperature.
Yep.
We can deal with moisture. So what we're trying to do in all of these is make sure that the moisture content of the air and or the material itself stays below the levels that mold, mildew, and wood rot can grow in. So when we're talking about a safe wall assembly for an outside framed wall, we're saying we don't want to trap moisture in that wall. And a classic building system, we hear this all the time. My dad's been building this way, or my grandfather taught me how to build, and his buildings are still standing. We can tell you why. That building is still standing because it's also 10 air changes per hour, 50 pascals, which is a very leaky house. What's keeping that moisture from building up? The fact that every time a 10-mile-per-hour wind blows against the house, that moisture is being transported out by the wind. We're making our houses tighter and tighter because we know that air leakage is one of the most expensive parts of heating your house. But as we get tighter and tighter, we're leaving less room for that air infiltration to wick away or move that moisture out of a wall. That's why we're so concerned, because then what we're doing is we're creating that situation where, no, we can't control the fact that it's made of wood. No, we can't control the fact that the temperatures are where mold likes. But now we're failing to control the one thing we can control, which is that moisture.
Yeah, so definitely a moisture management has to be involved with any type of renovation work, you know, a plan for that, and also even building new. A lot of the systems, as Chris said, where you'll have someone tell you that, oh, I've been doing this for 20, 30 years, and I'm going to keep doing this. Well, there's a problem with that, because we are making our houses tighter by default with some of the engineered products that we're using, and because they're less expensive, but we're using different wraps and things like that, and so we're prohibiting the ability for the structure to dry appropriately. And so moisture happens. Moisture migration goes from a point of higher concentration to a point of lower concentration to form an equilibrium. Once it does that, and as it's doing that, it passes through the building materials. And then let's say it's passing from inside your house to the outside on a nice, cold, crisp day like this morning, and it hits that backside of the plywood or OSB sheathing, it will start to condense. And when that condenses, that means liquid water will then be on the surface of that building material, and thus there's that moisture component of that 3-point cycle that Chris said for mold development, and then premature structural deterioration. But add to that, you get mold in there. And as that air can move back and forth through the cavity into your house, you're breathing that. And so it can really affect the health and safety of the building occupants. So as you're doing this work in building science, it has to be apply the fact that you're going to be looking about how to keep the building structure safe, durable, so the building occupants stay healthy at the same time. And that's going to be addressing that moisture management side of things, and also the indoor air quality at the same time.
Yeah, wall assemblies are a big thing for us. We if you look at the classic wall from 1980, that's a 2x6 wall with OSB sheathing and a layer of plastic on the inside after filling the wall with fiberglass and then sheetrock on top. That was the advice up until about 15 years ago. And not only that, but we run into places where they're doing it
still doing
today.
It. Yes.
Even though the building science is clear that that is not the best way to build. So if you are doing a DIY project and you're opening up a wall and you see plastic sheet between the sheetrock and the studs and the insulation between the studs, take it off. Don't put it back. That's our advice. And that is not something you have to worry about. The whole idea behind that particular strategy was stop the vapor from inside the house as it migrates to the outside, or tries to migrate to the outside, that it will stop it from getting in there. But we know for a fact that that's not true, that it hasn't been working, and that when we open up walls in these houses, we often find mold, mildew, and other types of problems, which are directly related to that sheet of plastic being there, which stops the moisture that's been built up in the wall from drying back into the house.
And so with that, you know, some of the things that we want you to know that you're not alone in this. There are plenty of professionals, especially in the state of Vermont, who are passionate about doing the right thing when it comes to building your home, retrofitting your home, or correcting issues where things weren't done appropriately first off. And some of those are resources that are available through Efficiency Vermont, as we mentioned before. I do not work for Efficiency Vermont. I am a partner with Efficiency Vermont. Chris and I collaborate with them all the time and really believe on the mission that they have. But along with that, you can find other EN contractors, the EEN contractors out there, that will be able to do the home performance assessment, give you more information on how to go forward with your home. But also, there's a lot of DIY information, as Steve Spatz mentioned earlier, of videos and how-tos and the virtual button-up programs that are available that I really recommend you do before you could possibly do things that you would regret later. In addition to that, there are programs throughout the state like Heat Squad, as Chris mentioned earlier, Vermont Gas, and that can assist with some of the rebate monies and doing some of the audits for you. But also, should it be an income-sensitive situation, there is the Capstone Community Action Program that allows for weatherization for people of certain income levels that could actually not only do the audit for you, but also perform these improvements for you if you're at a certain income bracket, which is great. It's a great. We've actually walked away from a few of these building assessments, home performance assessments, because we realized they qualified for this assistance and they didn't have to have any out-of-pocket expense. So it's definitely worth getting into. And Chris, I would only ask if you could, once again, in the short time we have left, to be able to speak to how they could ask us further questions or contact us.
Absolutely. I'd like to just throw in there before I say that is there's also something called the Heat Saver Loan, which is being is out there through a number of the credit unions, including the VSEC, the Vermont State Employees Credit Union. Those are zero. If you have the right level of income, those are 0% loans for energy efficiency upgrades. The way to get in touch with us, if you want to get in touch with us when we're not on the line, we are available through housecallsvermont@gmail.com. We also have a website at the Home Builders website that is www.homebuildersvt.com/HCV. That again, www.homebuildersvt.com/HCV. Next week, we're going to be talking about the ABCs of energy efficiency work on your house. And looking forward to a long time. We've got a season of this, a half year of these shows. We're looking forward to interacting with you and to hearing about your problems and be able to walk you through the building science side of your home DIY.
And with that, one last thing. Not only can you find home improvement contractors on the Vermont Efficiency Vermont's website under the EEN network, but also if you're looking to do major renovations or building new, we strongly recommend that you go to the Vermont Builders and Remodelers Association website. There's a huge list of contractors who are really geared towards doing the right thing for their clients, the right thing for the environment, and we really recommend that you do that. Once again, that's the Vermont Builders and Remodelers Association's website. But we thank you for this opportunity, thank you for joining us, and look forward to having you back next week.
Have a good weekend.
All right, you've been listening to House Calls Vermont, brought to you by Hannon Home Center on Mason Drive in Waterbury, Shamrock Painting, painting and custom wood finishing, ShamrockPaintingCompany.com. RK Miles, Allen Lumber will soon be RK Miles. Tune into House Call Vermont for more details. Sticks and Stuff and Swanton Lumber with locations in St. Albans, Enosburg, Swanton, Derby, and Middlesex. Curtis Lumber. There's a Curtis Lumber near you. Find out where at CurtisLumber.com. And Mac Clark's Northern Basement Solutions for all things basement-y. NorthernNEFoundations.com. House Calls Vermont. Once again, the podcast will be up on Monday at WDEVradio.com. You can also look forward to daily features from the guys starting Monday afternoon during the 4 o'clock hour. And, of course, they'll be back again, Chris and Jim, back again next Saturday at 12:30 on WDEV, FM and AM.